Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to ask Travis Glazer, who is an OCL and TMR member and also the environmental director for Onondaga County, to introduce our guest speaker.
Thank you very much. So today we are fortunate to have Dareth Glantz with us. Dareth is the new executive director of OCRA, Onondaga County Resource Recovery Agency. I myself am a member of her board of directors for OCRA, so I work with her in that capacity. Prior to joining OCRA as our executive director, she also served on the board for 6 years, was a vice chair of the recycling committee, and was a U.S. commissioner in the International Joint Commission, where she worked with international disputes between United States and Canada on some of our shared international waters. Prior to that, Dareth was with Citizens Campaign for the Environment. And so in introducing her, I wanted to reference back to her times at Citizens Campaign for the Environment, which, in case you don't know, is a advocacy group, a grassroots advocacy organization, which organizes locally. Dareth was actually my first boss. Right out of college, I worked for Dareth. She trained me in what's called door-to-door canvassing. So what you do is you go door-to-door and you advocate on an issue. And even then, I was struck by Dareth's relentless optimism. And going door-to-door, it's a very difficult thing. And she was able to move on from point to point and to continue. And it's one thing to be optimistic, but she's also driven. She's constantly pushing and constantly going. So there's this optimism, there's this drive, and then beyond that, there's an energy, which is something you'd like to bottle up and sell. And so when I was fortunate enough to be on the OCRA board and have the opportunity to consider Dareth as our executive director, I had seen that energy, that optimism, and that drive, and I thought there was no better person to help our community drive forward in how we manage our future. So with that, Dareth Glantz.
Thank you so much, Travis. That's really sweet that you call me your first boss, but I think it was really Sherry Bollert was your first boss. And I was so excited to be able to meet Travis and just watch all the incredible things that he did. He's such an incredible talent that walked in the office. I am so happy to be back at OCRA. For the last 5 years, I was with the International Joint Commission, so I did a significant amount of travel. Syracuse has been my home base this whole time since I moved here in 2001, but I was so excited to be able to work where I live. And OCRA is such a fascinating organization. Being able to travel in Canadian cities from Vancouver to Quebec City along the northern border in the United States, I've got to see a lot of the way that solid waste was done in many of those other communities. And really, Onondaga County has a phenomenal system, and people are very receptive. It's very responsible, and I'm just thrilled to be able to talk about that today. So we work to save the world a little each day. No matter who you are, how old you are, what you're able to do, you're able to make the good decisions to make sure that we're able to use those resources at their highest level at the next stage of their life, whether it's putting it in the blue bin and you're recycling your bottles and cans, or you're choosing to bring that reusable bag to the grocery store. All of these decisions make a significant difference in our community. Really excited that Earth Day is coming up. April 21 and April 22nd is when OCRA celebrates Earth Day. Our community boasts one of the largest community litter cleanups in the United States. It's absolutely amazing. Right now, the latest numbers I heard last night, we were up there with about 5,700 individuals that signed up. And guess you guys still have time. The registration closes on the 14th of April. So get your group in, get yourself in, grab some neighbors, and let's really pick up our neighborhood. All of that stuff that's on the ground is going to get washed into our rivers, streams, into the lake, and it's nasty, and it doesn't make our community look very nice. And it also, if there's that plastic contamination, those plastic bottles, those plastic bags, all that stuff, it never goes away. It might get smaller and smaller. What happens, it's called photodegrade, so the sun will break them down, but then those pieces of plastic get smaller and smaller, fish eat them, and it's changing our entire ecosystem. So you can really save the world a little each day. Do what you can. Pick up that stuff, and we'll kind of go into what we're doing here at Okra. So we provide a comprehensive solid waste system in Onondaga County. I like to think of Okra as the load-bearing wall of the solid waste program. So we have a board of directors, we have several programs, but the most important thing that we do is... we do a lot, but it's really building and leveraging relationships and partnerships with all of the other actors in the community, the hauling community. We work with our retail stores to make sure that there's convenient opportunities to take back like your old fluorescent bulbs, or where you can go and pick up the compost that we've been able to make, and to make recycling as easy and convenient as possible. When I moved here in 2001, I was just blown away. I grew up in Michigan, where we had this 10-cent deposit on soda cans, and that's how I paid for laundry in college. And then I moved to Indianapolis, and there was nothing. There was no recycling whatsoever. Everybody was just throwing, even these cans away. And it was uncomfortable, and why are we doing this? And then I moved here, and it was easy and wonderful, and it just was great. So our Earth Day litter cleanup. We also have household hazardous waste. So Okra operates, we own the capacity of the waste-to-energy plant, and we do a lot of work to ensure that only the best stuff that's supposed to be burned at high levels with very strong environmental controls goes to the plant. So if you've got some old stuff in your basement like paint thinners or other kind of chemicals, you can make an appointment at your convenience to drop it off and get rid of it properly. There's other things that we don't want to have in the waste-to-energy plant, such as pressure-treated lumber, so we bypass that, PVC pipe. So that's kind of, we want to make sure that we're just burning the best stuff. And we operate two transfer stations, one on Rock Cut Road and one at Lay Creek. And then we have two compost and mulch facilities, one in Jamesville and the other one's in Amboy off of Airport Road outside of Camillus. These are kind of the key things that we end up doing. We do a lot of work with Covanta, which is the company that runs the waste-to-energy plant. We really want to make sure we keep mercury and unnecessary things out of the waste stream as well. So we do thermometer collection events, as well as encouraging folks to make sure that we're properly disposing of those compact fluorescent light bulbs. And we're at over 2 million pounds of litter since 1991, which is when we began the Earth Day litter cleanup. We work very closely with the town highway departments and are able to provide free disposal of all the litter that the communities are able to pick up and leave. So one of the significant services there. So just so you have an idea of what happens in the rest of the world. So this is the waste hierarchy. First, you want to reduce and reuse. That is something that you cannot measure because we're reducing and reusing it. Then you want to recycle, and then you want to recover it for energy. And finally, your last option is landfilling. And so if you look at what's happening nationally, they're recycling about 34%, 12% is being recovered for energy, and then over half of the waste stream is going to a landfill. That's the national average. Okra is consistent with what the hierarchy of the solid waste management should be, and we excel. And so you'll see that our triangle is pointed the correct way, with about 5% of the waste stream in Onondaga County actually goes to a landfill, and that's that bypass stuff that we don't want to take to the waste-to-energy plant. And we have a recycling rate of about 57%. We think that's a little lower because all of the businesses report to us voluntarily. And so we know that there's some folks that weren't able to tell us or didn't track that data. But that gives you a good idea that it's, we're about half stronger than the national average as far as recycling. And what's really important about Onondaga County, too, so we have the strong blue bin program. Some communities are moving towards these larger recycling bins, or they're called toters, which is very exciting. Folks in Camillus have that right now. And we have one of the cleanest recycling streams in the nation. The residue rate from what people put in the blue bin that can get processed is about, it ranges between 1 and 3%. So it's really incredible. So what we're doing, and we're doing it really, really well, which is fantastic. So when we work with Waste Management, and they run the Recycle America, it's called a material recovery facility, the Recycling Center, or a MRF. And so every quarter they do a waste audit of just Onondaga County blue bin material that comes in, and that's where we get those numbers, and it's really impressive. So the issues that we do have in the blue bin are primarily with plastic bags, that thin film plastic gums up the works in the recycling facility. They're just never put it in the blue bin, just period. So what, you know, some folks do, right? You're in your kitchen, you have your soup cans, you end up putting in a plastic bag to bring that downstairs to then put down into your blue bin later on. Some folks leave that in the plastic bag, and that makes it very challenging to recycle, and sometimes those things aren't going to be recycled. So just no plastic bags at all in the blue bin. The plastic bags do have a use afterwards. They actually make up a very sizable portion of the waste stream, but you can take them to any big box retailer. So any grocery store like Wegmans or Price Chopper, or even PetSmart, they have a plastic bag repository where you can drop yours off if you've been hoarding them. Like, I find big bags of plastic bags in my house sometimes and then realize it's time to get rid of them and make sure you recycle. Turn them into really solid lumber, your plastic decking. So there's a whole other use for them. So we want to make sure that we're able to do it. But it's really critical that they're clean and that they go to the right spot. So we do not do any of that collection. Like I said, we have haulers. We have contracts with our haulers, and that is facilitated all through a private market or a municipal market if your municipality does its own hauling. We have flow control, which is one of the really unique aspects in Onondaga County. And so we don't allow, through a local law, any of the garbage to leave Onondaga County. So if it's here, we have to manage it here. And that's what flow control means. So that allows us to be able to have this waste-to-energy plant. It costs a little bit more to you have to operate this thing. And so it costs a little bit more than going right to a landfill. But that way we're able to manage that. And then the tipping fee from our waste-to-energy plant is really what funds all of these other programs, too. And that's what makes this entire system possible. And there's a few other communities that have flow control. It's gone all the way up to the Supreme Court. It's been affirmed. It's really grounded in this idea of local municipalities being able to have that protect the hygiene and sanitation and health and safety of the residents. And so that's the principle there. So we are doing all of these things from our residential and commercial recycling and organics management. And so the organics is really exciting. Okra is just creating an amazing product through food scraps and yard waste. We receive material from the zoo. We receive material from almost all of the restaurants at Destiny. We have about 30 other restaurants, including Postabilities and others, that bring the food scraps that aren't suitable for human consumption or even for animals, and bring them to us, and then we're able to turn them back into a very valuable soil amendment compost. So compost has a variety of benefits. Not only is it taking that organics, we don't need to burn organics at the incinerator. That's what's really producing a lot of that methane that comes out of your landfills, and it is also an incredible carbon sink. So you can use local compost here as you're getting ready to garden, which I plan to do. That's my Saturday plan, and grow really amazing things with locally produced, yard waste and food scraps that was right here in the county. And so this is what the waste stream looks like. This is my only busy, super, super busy slide for you. And let's see here. There's a pointer, right? Is there a pointer? Ah, there we go. So recycling, we're at 196,000 tons of recycling. That goes to the private MRF, that Recycle America. Out of that, you know, we're able to recycle the paper, the plastic, the glass, the metal, okay? And then this is construction and demolition debris. So when you're a weekend, whether you're a weekend warrior destroying your bathroom to make a new one, or, you know, there's houses coming down, this stuff goes to the transfer station. From there, we're able to recover the metal and cardboard, and that's about 2,500 tons from annually that then we're able to recycle. And then we take about 80,000 tons to the waste-to-energy plant. There's about 15,000 tons, like that PVC pipe, the other stuff that we are not going to send to the plant. That's what we bypass. And so that is either going to Camillus as a C&D landfill, or we take it over to Seneca Meadows. And then the trash, we have generate about 240,000 tons of garbage a year here in Onondaga County that's sent directly to the waste-to-energy plant. From that, it's able to reduce, you know, we're able to capture the electricity, power about 36,000 homes in the county, and then it gets down to about 80,000 tons of ash. The ash has a beneficial use, so it's used as an alternative daily cover for landfills. It's actually kind of amazing stuff to put, you know, your concentrated garbage on top of other garbage, but it seals it up. It keeps the vermin like the seagulls and other stuff at bay, and it can also add additional structure to those cells in the way that you're or the way you do your landfill. So it's very useful material for communities that are serviced by landfills. And then we're doing about 6,000 tons of food, and it goes to this compost site, which you can kind of see there's 8 bays, and the compost is mixed, 3 parts food, or actually 3 parts yard waste to 1 part food waste in this, and I don't have a picture of the truck, but it's basically like your giant, it's a giant KitchenAid on the back of a truck. And so you make basically, you know, it's batter, right? It's got to be the right consistency, and you've got to mix this stuff all properly up so you don't get any anaerobic pockets. We do these tests to make sure that the bulk density is correct and that the bugs are able to do what the bugs do to break the stuff down and make wonderful compost. But really, it's the way you build a bay is, I mean, it's this kind of, it's like baking. So the bottom is what we call the plenum layer. There's air that comes up through these trenches to make sure it's an air static pile, so it's a a total aerobic process, and so at the bottom layer is really kind of rough cut wood, like shredded pallets, and so that kind of keeps the air able to move up. You put the material, our batter, our dough, in the middle, and on the top we have a biofilter, which is a lot of mulch and other kind of bulking agents on top, and so they're in the first bays for typically around 30 days. They've got to get up to a certain temperature, which is about 150 degrees, killing off the pathogens and the weed seeds. And our compost is tested on a regular basis to ensure that we have the highest standards. So this is kind of what we're at 57% recycled right now. We just finished our annual recycling report, and so we were able to recycle just under 500,000 tons last year just in Onondaga County, which is really impressive. And we expect I have some exciting stuff to talk about what we're going to do in the future. So this is another picture of what's happening out in Amboy, and you can buy some passes and go and self-load and get your own compost and mulch. You can buy the premium pass, and if you have a flatbed truck, we can load that for you as well. And there's also drop-off services. And again, we talked about Earth Day litter cleanup. Hopefully you've seen some of our billboards that have been kicking around, and really encourage folks to pick up. Would love for you to register. If you really can't register, you can still pick up garbage at any point in time off the side of the road and make our community beautiful. But this is what we have organized. And we know that when the snow leaves, things are out there. It's windy and blustery in central New York, and it takes a little bit of all of us to make sure that we make a big difference. So these are just a host of the community partners that Okra works with. Not only are the residents phenomenal recyclers, I mean, really one of the best in the country, you can buy our compost in bags at Country Max. and many other, like, kind of the Ace True Value hardware stores we have relationships with. We do a lot of work with Arc of Onondaga. They actually help in, they sort batteries for us. We do battery collections, and, you know, a lot of folks aren't sitting around saying, oh, well, I'm going to put my my rechargeable battery here, and my alkaline battery here, my lithium battery is here. It's just easier for us to tell you, give us your batteries. And so our friends at Arc do a lot of that work to sort those things out, and they also help bag at our compost site too, so we can create those bags and folks can get something very convenient. And the most recent exciting thing that we're doing is is West Rock. So West Rock is the Solvay paperboard mill, if you guys are familiar with the paperboard mill that's out there in Solvay. They take all of the cardboard in Onondaga County and the surrounding areas and turn it into new cardboard. And as a result of that process, so it's a recycling process in and of itself, and out of that process, there's a byproduct. So I'm sure all of you are very good recyclers, but I imagine you've left some tape or a packing label or some staples or something else in your cardboard when you put it out at the curbside, because everybody has. And so that's the byproduct that comes out. So there's two streams, and most of it is like that tape and kind of light plastic stuff. And there's also a metal stream. So when you put all the cardboard together, in order to keep it together, you use metal baling wire. And in order to capture when you're breaking down the fibers, there's these large vats of water that's breaking down the fibers for the cardboard, and there's something called it's a rope that gets started, and it goes around in the centrifuge and collects all of the all of that plastic and other stuff that isn't cardboard, that isn't fiber, that we're going to turn into new cardboard. And that it's about 150 feet long. It's called ragger tail or pulper rope. And it's really challenging stuff to deal with. And so Ocre wasn't able to manage this stuff before. It's too big to go into the waste energy plant. It's just very challenging. And so that was being landfilled. We just developed a partnership with West Rock. Ocre is investing in a shredder and some additional equipment to be able to manage that tough pulper rope. We'll be able to recycle now an additional 3,000 tons of metal a year because of that. And we'll be able to keep over 40,000 tons a year from going to a landfill. And we're going to keep all the material here locally in the county, which is fantastic. Like, they've been driving, you know, it's about 132 miles to High Acres on, you know, near Rochester and back. And so we'll be avoiding those miles and just keeping it to about 10 miles between, you know, Solvay and the town of Onondaga, which is very exciting. This is what I just talked about. So there we go. I'm very excited about it. That's cardboard box right there. See the tape? That's the kind of stuff we're talking about. And so it's really like recycling at the tertiary level. And plus, you know, anything we can do to help keep manufacturing here and especially supporting the recycling industry in Onondaga County, we want to be able to do that. So the waste-to-energy plant has been around for about 22 years now. It has very, very strong environmental controls. It was a subject of some really significant community debate when it was built. I was not here for that debate, but I have heard a lot about it. And as a result of that and that activism, we have some of the toughest permit limits of any waste-to-energy plant, which is fantastic. So we really strive for the highest environmental compliance, and we have legislative oversights. Peggy Chase makes sure that we are doing exactly what we're supposed to do, which is great. And so we aren't importing waste into the county, and we burn it at very high temperatures with very, very strong environmental controls. I think I'm getting ready to. Oh no, there we go. So about 15% of the county can be powered through the waste-to-energy plant. It's a really reliable source of electricity. Even when there's big storms or when we have issues, one of the things that humans are pretty reliable at doing is creating garbage. So we typically always have some feedstock and we're able to keep this thing going. We do regular outages and significant operation and maintenance to keep it as high functioning as possible. Covantis has several plants throughout the United States, and the Onondaga plant is really the top plant. And so if they're going to take somebody to a plant, they're going to take them here. We have a really phenomenal system. And actually, the Central New York Regional Planning and Development Board is in the process of working with NYSERDA to do phase two of their feasibility study to create a microgrid, because we have this power source right here that's close to hospitals, close to really critical infrastructure in our community. They're looking at an opportunity to make sure that to see if we can have a microgrid, so if things go bad, we can, you know, kind of turn that switch. If you remember the big power outage of 2003, turn off that switch and make sure that we're able to send that reliable power to what needs it the most, like the hospitals. So, which is a very exciting project. So we look forward to seeing what ends up happening there. But we think we're saving folks about $14 million a year in terms of avoided disposal costs, and our recycling rate is about double what the national average is. I really think this educational program that Ocher has is just truly phenomenal. So we worked with teachers, brought them in, developed curriculum that's consistent with the Common Core in the areas of English and science, and really made this really great program. So if the teacher is out sick, you have a sub, or if you just want to add this to your unit, it's pretty much, you know, push and go, and it's compliant with the curriculum, and kids get to learn where the garbage goes, and who doesn't want to know where the garbage goes? Everybody wants to know. So this is Ed Smith School. They won our award and were recognized for their significant excellence in recycling at the school. We have a dedicated staff person goes to every single school in Onondaga County every single year, we have more and more schools that are doing composting. I think we're upwards to 6 districts right now that are composting their food waste. So the kids are, you know, at the end of lunch, they're putting their milk where their milk should go, they're putting the food where the food should go, putting the other stuff everywhere else. And you know, because you got to get them when they're young. And kids are excellent recyclers. So it's been really exciting. And I think that's been a very important area where we invest. We have gotten national recognition. Actually, yeah, this is international recognition with SWANA of North America, an outstanding achievement for what we've been able to do with integrating understanding the solid waste system into the school curriculum. So I'm going to kind of wrap it up there. I think we get to have some conversations. But this is my contact information. We're always available to answer any questions. Really, ocherra.org, O-C-R-R-A.org is really our front door. It gives you all that great information. And we are being taped, so I will wait for you to facilitate the conversations here.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I think it's an excellent presentation. I guess from my perspective, it's the first time I've fully appreciate what you're saying, that it's kind of a within the county, a womb to tomb type of encompasses everything.
Yeah.
My question really goes to capacity. It seems to be there's a lot of self-funding into this because you could sell off different byproducts or whatever. But we also hear about things like the waste disposal or a burning plant, bringing in stuff from Cortland or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Because they have the capacity to do that. My real question is this something that, with what we've got in place right now today, something that could last for 50 years and just continue on its own, or do we need increased capacity costs and things like that?
So that's an excellent question, and I will address many of those things. So number one, Ocher is a public benefit corporation, so we are not funded through taxpayer dollars. We're self-funded, like you recognize, through the tipping fees and through the electricity generation when we're selling that off. So when I was on the board, the economy was kind of cranking, and electricity prices were up, and we had about $20 million in our reserves. And we buy a lot of really expensive, heavy equipment. So having a couple million dollars in reserves, really, really important for us. And so that was when electricity, our electricity sales comprised about 36% of our budget. So today, because electricity is so much lower, back then, in say 2007, we were getting like 6.5 cents a kilowatt hour. And now I got in February 1.6 cents a kilowatt hour. So that's went from my budget. You know, I still have to pay for all the maintenance, all the vehicles, all the people, all the things we need. And a big portion of our budget was really reduced as a result of the glut on the energy market, primarily from the natural gas boom. But we can talk about that. So just so you understand that those are those issues. Now, the capacity issue, there was exploration and intermunicipal cooperation with Cortland. They needed some help. Oker thought that we could help them and they could help us. When I got in, I explored this again. It ended up being quite a dead end. So we've moved on. And the West Rock material, being able to make these investments in the shredder technology and the other equipment, is going to allow us to maximize that, optimize the capacity of the plant and ensure the recovery of those materials. So I'm not concerned about the capacity issues. Our community, you know, we have three boilers at the waste to energy plant, and our community generates at least enough to do 2.5, even if we're really good at waste reduction. So we could never get to just two boilers at the level where we're operating. So we want to make sure that we're optimizing the assets that we have. But with the West Rock partnership, anticipate that will just be fine. So I think I answered those key questions there. Yeah.
I have a couple of questions, if I may. The first one is, I live in Camillus, and we've just converted to the new system with the big, great big containers. Mm-hmm. We throw everything in one container for recycling. Everything else, the garbage and so on, goes into a separate container. What do you do now as far as separating? Because there's no separation when you put it in the recycling in the one bin and put everything in that.
So kind of circa 2003, 2004, single stream recycling became kind of the wave of what was happening in the solid waste industry. And it's actually pretty interesting how they're able to do that. And Recycle America, which is operated by Waste Management, does this up in Liverpool. And so I've been there several times, but it's a bunch of conveyor belts different pieces that, you know, are able to move how heavy cardboard is over to this direction. The plastics go over here, and then when the plastics are moving further on, there's actually even optical sorting that happens, where they're able to say whether it's just through a laser and the way that it reads the material, whether or not it's high-density plastic or not, and then those are then further separated from there. There's also people that these are jobs, and so they're out there on the line pulling certain things. So some of this is hand-sorted, some of it is automatically sorted at the recycling facility. And I'm glad that you're enjoying your large toters. We think that's really the wave of the future and where things are going. Your supervisor has been very helpful. So, you know, that's really the theme of my job, too. No matter what we do, things are very challenging. But, yeah, no, that's good.
Are you fairly free from federal regulations, or do you see any changes with the Trump administration and EPA affecting you?
I really love municipal solid waste, and I find it to be very autonomous, and we have very little interaction at the federal level. I came from the federal government prior to the transition, and so we're accountable to the people of Onondaga County. We have permits through the DEC, and we will have conversations about solid waste and overall big solid waste, big picture issues on like kind of a policy issue. But in general, not really. Waste to energy is not the largest energy giant in the energy advocacy world, there's a small group of us, a handful of waste to energy plants, so they have some influence, but nothing like the nuke industry or the coal industry or anything else. It's very local.
Well, that was kind of my question, but let me see if I can move a little bit beyond it too. Driving in, I heard a report on NPR about the morale at the EPA in Washington, and that it's really in the basement right now. And of course, there's a lot of apprehensiveness about what's coming in terms of the mission of EPA. And I guess I'd ask you to maybe speak a little bit as an environmental activist, which you have been in your career. And I'm wondering if you see other ways, perhaps, or some ways that the changing mission on the federal level could affect Onondaga County.
I think the most important thing to remember is that when the people lead, the leaders follow, and this too shall pass. So as long as you continue to stay focused on what your core values are and what is right, and you make those investments, the culture is going to keep moving along. So I really, you know, there are significant changes that can happen at the federal level through funding, through programs, through a variety of other things that could have a gap in service. But as long as you still have corporations and local government that recognize, that have that longer view, that recognize the importance of infrastructure that protects clean water, that manages solid waste properly, that takes care of the infrastructure that we have, I think we're going to be better, because at some point in time, we have to deal with these problems. And I think it's about having an engaged citizenry that continues to demand to their elected leaders at all levels what is important, and also for folks to be brave enough to put themselves out there and decide to serve their community and have their voice heard at a larger level, too. Because, you know, what's beautiful about our democracy, and that's actually really, like, that's where my core is I study political theory and constitutional democracy. And, you know, our country's always kind of done this swing, right? So that's what we do. We go from one side to another, and then it's kind of this pendulum. And but at the critical thing that has always moved and the needle further are the people pushing that, and you can't ignore a lot of people, and that's the most important thing. So yes, I understand morale is very tough, and EPA right now, I feel very bad for the folks that are frustrated there. It's not great to be working in that kind of environment, and but I think it's really important that that people recognize what the difference of what Manhattan looked like in 1970 and what it looks like today, and how it's nice to go out there and have clean air to breathe and clean water to drink, and that our laws create, and actually people will often kind of get down on regulations, but it creates a level playing field, and it creates jobs. It says these are the problems that we all have to solve and we have to pay attention to. And if we're thinking about it while we're planning, it's so much easier to solve and make those little tweaks than when you go back and have to retrofit things too. So trying not to cut corners and really taking that long view, I think, is really what's the most critical aspect as far as what we need to look for in leadership in our localities. And then that'll be transferred up to the federal governments. But really, the local municipalities usually are, the incubators of innovation. The states look at what the local municipalities have done. If that works, take it on the state level. If it works on the state level, and then typically the feds will then end up adopting it. So, I mean, it's really, always go from grassroots bottom up. I'll leave you with a little bit of Plato, which is the price of apathy is to be ruled by evil men. So the worst thing you can do is to give up and not be engaged. But you are all here, so you are engaged people.
Good morning. The only thing that Albany has that Syracuse doesn't have is a company that will come and pick up your garbage for composting. You have to pay a small fee for it. I find it hard to believe there's no entrepreneurs in this area that aren't interested in setting up a service. So what's the problem in the Syracuse-Onondaga County area?
Well, I wouldn't say there's necessarily a problem. So Onondaga County, like from Oakers perspective, we wanted to focus on the large, producers of organic waste that's already separated, and has minimal contamination. And so there are some communities that are beginning to think about providing services for, residential compost collection in Onondaga County, and they're working, and we've been talking with them, and so we'll be interested to see how their RFP ends up coming out, some of the municipalities. Ithaca tried this. We've been really looking at other examples. There's significant capital investments in the type of vehicles that you need to have and the materials that you need to have, and you really need to have very interested and passionate people that are able to do it. We allow folks to drop stuff off at our sites in Jamesville and Amboy. I imagine as the market grows, the governor actually did include legislation in his executive budget that would ban organics coming from, if you produced over 2 tons of organic waste a month, I think it's, is it a month. From, you know, so that would be your restaurants, cafeterias, you know, large producers. Then those would have to be diverted from the waste stream and would have to be, or would have to be composted or go through an anaerobic digestion process. And so that legislation was out there, part of the executive budget. It was not adopted, but I think these are the ideas that are coming out there to really, how do we even make even our waste system even more sophisticated and send the market the signals that this product that we once considered was waste actually has a value, it's a resource, and we're going to be able to use that as the raw material to create another product. And so I really think that, you know, having entrepreneurs are able to do this, that's fantastic. There's a lot of risk involved, and I think as you get more policy and more signals to the market, you'll see more of those players emerge. And we definitely encourage, you know, that kind of innovation.
Good morning. Thank you for coming this morning.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to ask about textile recycling.
Thank you.
You have Rescue Mission and Salvation Army listed, but they will only take textiles that are saleable. So things that are stained or things that are ripped, that kind of thing, they will not take those, and you don't take them at your Rock Cut or other places either. So I wondered what
that's,
the plan
That's was. Not my understanding. So we definitely want the textiles to be clean. So, I mean, but they can have a stain, they can be missing a button, because there's actually the secondary rag market that's out there. So they definitely want your saleable stuff, you know, the sweater that you aren't going to wear anymore that somebody else might like. But there is this really strong secondary rag market, where these textiles are able to be, recycled, even if they have a stain. I mean, not like they're soiled, but, you know, if they have a stain or if there's buttons missing and stuff, they're able to use them for other purposes. And textiles are actually the next big chunk in the waste stream. So we did an analysis. The last time we did a full analysis was in 2005. It's called a waste characterization and quantification study. And we found, you know, such a huge chunk was organics, which is really what kind of had Okra really develop this large composting program that we have. The next big chunk that we know that's there is textiles. So I'm really happy that you raised it. There's a good secondary market for it. And the Rescue Mission and the Salvation Army have been very helpful in really facilitating that recovery. There's also other boxes that you can see around the neighborhoods where you can do that. But increasing textile recovery is really, really important. Our director of waste reduction and recycling is actually on the Textile Recovery Council. And so we're really trying to push that one as much as possible. A couple other things at the state level, just so you guys know. We really want to see extended producer responsibility adopted as a more formal policy. There's no reason why a company that's making a lot of money at the point of sale has zero responsibility for the end of life of that product, and all of that cost is transferred back to the municipality. It's not fair to you, it's not fair to us, like, just doesn't make sense. So one of the things we're working on with Assemblyman Sturpee has just been a great leader in a paint stewardship bill that would allow us to be able to actually recover and recycle paint and get that out of so we could reuse it again. He has a zillion sponsors on his piece of legislation. It's already passed the Senate. Senator Valesky and Senator DeFrancisco have been great big supporters. We would really think that the paint stewardship bill would be a fantastic piece to move forward. A lot of times I get a lot of questions about e-waste, your TVs. If your TVs or you need to get rid of e-waste, electronic waste, as long as it's not cracked. So it can't be like cracked, and but if it doesn't work, that's fine. It just has to be intact. So if it's intact and it you want to get rid of it, the Salvation Army is really the place to take that, and they'll take care of that for you. There's extended producer responsibility law in place in New York State for e-waste. We're still waiting on the regs from DEC, which I think would make things a little bit more convenient for people. If it is cracked, then we have to deal with it as more hazardous waste, which is a little bit more challenging. So I just wanted to do that. My e-waste piece there.
You mentioned that one of the worst litter things is a plastic bag.
Yeah.
There are countries that are actually saying no to plastic bags. What's happening in New York State and in the U.S. and in Syracuse about plastic bag disposition?
Okay, that's a great question. So plastic bags have been, you know, a subject of a lot of municipal discussion for a long time. I mean, they're unsightly. There's some great videos about talking about them as the next new invasive species. And so New York City took some action. That rate, they put a fee. Because it wasn't always the way that you would go to a store. Like 100 years ago, if you go and bought something, they wouldn't give you a free bag. This whole, like, you get free bag with purchase, whether it's plastic, is relatively a new concept. And so the idea of being able to put a fee is just enough of incentive, like a 5-cent fee. It's just enough incentive to kind of say, you know, oh, it's psychological for humans. I'll bring my bag. I don't need to say that. You know what? I don't need that plastic bag on that one thing I bought at the store. I can carry that in my hand to say no. But what happened is, you know, different municipalities passed different approaches to curbing plastic bag pollution. Madison County has a law that I believe they'll be having a public hearing very soon on that they're considering. And so as a result of the fee that New York City put on their bag ban, the legislature got involved, the state legislature. And so the governor just appointed a plastic bag task force. So we look forward to seeing what those recommendations are, and encourage you to continue to look at innovative ways to reduce the single-use consumption. I mean, whether they're plastic bags or cups or a variety of other things, it's huge. And it's really the most common form of litter. So the more that we reuse things, the more durable something is, the less likely we are to just leave it on the ground and have it hurt wildlife and neighborhood aesthetics. So I don't have a good answer for you, but that's where we are right now, is a task force phase at the state level. And again, you know, it's really when the people lead, the leaders follow.
Well, this is outside of your area of responsibility. Would you talk to us about the disposition, recycling of tires?
Sure. tires are really tough, okay? So we have one, it makes me nervous. We have one place where we can get rid of tires right now, and that's Seneca Meadows. Boom, that's it. And it's really hard. And so we take our tires to Seneca Meadows and they're landfilled. They chip them, they can kind of help use them to help the structure of the cell of the landfill cell. So there is some kind of a use for them. But you know, with oil being so low, with, you know, there's not a demand for the used tires. So the markets aren't very strong and we have one outlet. So that makes me really nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had one question regarding the waste energy plant. That is, does it have a life expectancy, or do you have a plan B if you can't use them anymore? Oh. And also related to that, how common is it for communities across the country to have a waste energy plant?
Great. So there's always a plan B because, you know, if something's going to go wrong, it can, right? So, the waste to energy plant's been operating for 22 years. We just signed another contract with Covanta that'll take us through 2035 with a 5-year extension. So. 2040, and we're making over a $15 million investment in the plant. So just significant upgrades as far as overhauling the turbine generator, which is what generates the electricity, to increase the efficiency, to, you know, update all of the environmental controls. We've changed the way that we use ammonia as a way to control a lot of the emissions, and so we changed the way that we're doing with that so we could reduce even more of the NOx emissions that come out of it. And so there's always maintenance and operations. So as far as what is, you know, how long will it last? You know, we are, you know, till 2040 right now is the contract. It depends on how well you maintain that asset and what other kind of technology is going to be out there. When it was built in the 90s, I think people thought that we would be doing some really other significant activities with garbage by now. But things haven't changed that much. So if there's a plan B, so one of the things we had to do in order to build a waste energy plant is to ensure that we had a landfill in the county. So we don't have we have a sited landfill. It's called Site 31. It's in Van Buren. There people farm on it, and there's houses, and there's no garbage in it. But that is the site. So if you know, worst case scenario, we wanted to make sure that we were able to take care of our garbage locally, there's a sited landfill, but it would have to be developed. So it's not our intention to develop that anytime soon, but that's kind of the protection to ensure that there's a place for garbage to go no matter what happens.
I have a rhetorical question. What did we do with, or how did we consume water before we had bottled water? And what shall we do about that particular issue?
So there's these really handy-dandy things, and they're reusable water bottles. You can, like, fill them up and carry them with you. There's cups. I see that gorgeous coffee mug you have right there. Water was very instrumental in making the coffee. So, you know, really just kind of think, is this durable? Can I use this again? How many times can I use this? I don't want you to be dehydrated, but, you know, there is drinking fountains. And I love the new drinking fountains where it's so easy to just sit there and it automatically fills up your water bottle. So it's really that infrastructure, and so we kind of call solid waste infrastructure kind of softer infrastructure. But you know, if there's a garbage can in a recycling in a clearly labeled recycling container next to it, people will typically do what's right to do if you make it easy for them. So if it's really easy to bring your water bottle, and you can actually go right down over there by the cafeteria and the zoo, and you'll see this glorious way to fill up your water bottle. And it's really easy. So I think really kind of investing in that infrastructure. And it's one of the things that we really do well at Okra, I think, is really use community-based social marketing. I think that's a testament to how we use it so well is how low that residual rate is. And so it's really about shifting culture over time. You know, when I was a kid, my parents had a 1980 green van. They converted them themselves. There was no seatbelt. I went to Florida. I went all over the place. I had a grand old time. There's no way I would ever put my kids in a car without a seatbelt. Like, I just wouldn't do that. So I think you get to a point of what are the social norms and how do you help shape those social norms? And it's really a peer-to-peer interaction and making sure it's easy, that there's infrastructure, that there's a place for you to go fill up that bottle and you get on with your day and you reduce the garbage.
It's wonderful to see someone with your passion heading up Okra. I really appreciate it. And thank you for making garbage so interesting.
Yes.
My question is, I recently heard on NPR a segment that there was an expert saying that the market for recyclables is really disappearing. And I wondered if you could comment on that and how that's going to impact what Okra does and what the rest of us do. Yeah.
So one of the key roles of Okra in our community, that load-bearing wall analogy that I go back to, is that we work to insulate those volatilities of the market so we can maintain that infrastructure, whether commodity prices are good or commodity prices are low. Right now, old corrugated cardboard, or OCC, is really high. So that's good for us sometimes, but like our partners at WestRock, them buying really expensive cardboard for their feedstock to turn into more cardboard, that's really tough. Metal's gone up a little bit right now, which is really nice for the recovery, but that stuff can, I mean, it can swing really quickly. And so we have an arrangement with the waste, with the recycling facility that, so there's a cost, there's a straight cost share. So when markets are strong, Okra gets a share. When our markets are really weak, we end up paying the recycling facility so that we can maintain that asset in our community to continue the program, whether the markets are strong or not. And so a lot of and it's all international. I mean, there's things we control and things we don't control. I don't control the price of electricity. I don't control what they're doing in China. And that's where a lot of the export markets are. But what we do is we really invest to make sure that we maintain that infrastructure and we work to insulate those assets from the volatilities of the market. But you're absolutely right. It's tough.
Good morning. My question is about packaging, which seems to be where a lot of recyclables and other trash are generated, and then lots of it end up in our oceans.
Yes.
So, A, what can we do to reduce packaging or make sure that the content of packaging is recyclable? And two, what can we do about the floating islands of debris in the ocean?
Okay. So, one of the best things I think is, you know, these people are selling you a product and you're buying it. And they're very sensitive. They want you to keep buying things. And, you know, I mean, if I bought a pair of boots and they ended up cracking and I got mad. So I took a picture of them and I posted it and I sent it on Twitter and to their attention. And, you know, you can publicly shame corporations and they can start making some changes or let them know what you like. So I think that direct, you know, consumer back to what you're buying, that kind of communication is very helpful. Choosing less packaging. We are seeing, like, you know, some less packaging, but sometimes, you know, they want you to see it on the shelf. So they're going to put it in a larger package so that they can get your attention to buy the product. Really making sure that we manage the waste that we do get properly, that it's in a container, that it's not, if you see litter, you can pick it up. And what we're going to do about what's happening to our lakes, rivers, oceans on plastic, it's really significant. There's going to be a point where there's going to be more plastic than fish. And that point is not too far in the future. And one of the other things about plastics, because I did a lot of work, there's a great binational action plan for reducing microplastics in the Great Lakes, which I participated in when I was at the International Joint Commission, and read some peer-reviewed journals, and I just think it's really fascinating. So you have fish, and they kind of, and it's captured in the idea that they get attracted to the plastics kind of like teenagers are to, like, fast food, right? It's easy. It's right there. It fills up your belly. It doesn't really necessarily give you the nutrition that you need. And that's what they're seeing with the fish. So they don't have to chase another fish to get that nutrition. They're able to fill up their bellies with plastic and then not have the nutrients, which is really problematic. So really picking the stuff up, reducing things as much as possible, is really, you know, getting involved in Earth Day and doing what you can, and which inspires other people to do what they can, and collectively, we can really make a big difference. And I look forward to some of the other innovative ideas that people have as far as the floating garbage, but a lot of that is, you know, some of it's floating, some of the plastic ends up being suspended in the water column, some of it's on the ground, on the bottom, and there's parts of the ecosystem being impacted at every level. And it's impacting our Great Lakes, it's impacting our rivers, because it all ends up flowing that direction. But really, I mean, just doing whatever we can to reduce litter and to reduce our consumption is the smartest thing for us to do. And inspire others in such a way. Shame doesn't really work. I was kind of joking about the shame, at least with people. You want to inspire them.
Thank you very much, Jareth. So interesting.
Thank you very much.